Namaste to everyone. Jai Ma. So, the secret knowledge, as we know, is a canto in Savitri, book 1, canto 4. And of course, the whole of Savitri is a secret knowledge. Because it's secret, because it's not something which we can receive, know, comprehend or understand by the senses or by the analytical faculties of the mind. So just to take a little digression, this was the path the rishis had taken. When we looked at the material world, like all of us, some of them tried to understand what this world is about, who we are, what we are. So they first understood this one single thing absolutely on spot, that with our present faculties we cannot understand. Our senses are limited, the mind's capacity to analyze is limited, largely because, one, its processes always act by comparison and contrast, and the repertoire of the senses, the capacity of the senses is limited. So they tried to find ways and means by which they could augment or maybe discover possibilities of new senses, new operations of the mind. And they succeeded. So that's the whole process of yoga, that are there layers of consciousness, are there ways and means by which we can go past the limitations of the senses, discover new ways of knowing. And they did it, and as they discovered new ways of knowing, new senses, they discovered worlds behind worlds, and worlds behind worlds, and worlds beyond worlds. And at the base of it, that one whom the world seeks. So this has been the subject of the Vedas, that they are discoveries made by the rishis. They didn't use the normal analytical processes. They not only transcended them, they discovered new means of discovering that. And they gave it to us not as a philosophy or a creed to believe in, but as a way to ourselves engage with that discovery and make that discovery. So there is the philosophical part and there is the yoga. Yoga is that we too can discover. It's not a belief that they gave to us that, okay, you have to believe because I have said. But man has to start from somewhere. He can't straight away, you know, you enter into a class, you have several years of PhD, but you start from somewhere. So we start with receiving this secret knowledge that we have been given by those who have gone before us. And in our context, of course, Sri Aurobindo himself. And we start with that, and then we go on to make the discoveries along those lines. So in that sense, it is very helpful to us. And as I said, the whole of Savitri in this sense is a secret knowledge. If you see, just to put it like that, it's really a mystery of mysteries. Personally, on a very personal level, as a child, I used to be very fascinated by mysteries. So I would read number of books, and science itself, you know, fascinated, because it's about exploring mystery. So if you look at Savitri, it's a mystery of mysteries. So book 1, for example, book 1, canto 1 and 2, in fact, in a way, discloses the mystery of life, the mystery of the divine birth in time, the mystery of the very reason why we exist. You know, it takes up the issue. What is the real issue? So we have in our mind that this is the real issue. I often hear people, but you know, these are the issues of life. I said, yes, they are issues. Nobody is denying it. But what is the issue? Okay, you have issues, but there must be some fundamental issue which we are here to resolve. Then when we look at book 1, canto 3, it's a mystery about what the higher being is going to be, what are the ways higher consciousness operates. So it's something which is not within our immediate range of experience. What it is to experience freedom, what really is freedom? So freedom is not just doing whatever I want to do, but freedom is to discover that inner state where you are completely regardless of your outer situations, circumstances, conditions, the dualities, everything, you are still inwardly free. It's not based on any external condition. A conditional freedom cannot be freedom by definition. Similarly, Book 1, Canto 5, the higher possibilities that await us, the cutting edge frontiers of creation. And then, of course, Book 1, Canto 4, there is a whole canto called Secret Knowledge. So it raises a question, the whole of Savitri's Secret Knowledge, why this canto is called Secret Knowledge. But before that, since we are talking of Savitri as a mystery, we can just quickly go through it. That Book 2 is a mystery of the worlds which are hidden behind our sight, behind our sensory experience. And not just one world, worlds beyond world. These are the several lokas, bhuvana, which are spoken of in Indian thought, in the Puranas and the Vedas. And there are several of these worlds. And why they are important? Because they have an impact on our life. In fact, even at this moment, they are having an impact upon our life. We only see the frontal appearance. We have some thought and we feel like speaking, we speak, we act in certain ways. We think it's all a normal thing. Well, behind this normal thing, there is a whole mass of phenomena, suggestions, forces, influences impacting us. And if we can understand it, it can make our life so much better. To give just an example, Aurobindo describes the worlds of darkness, where we can see directly where from depression comes, how it takes hold of us, what kind of thoughts it drags us into. So we can better handle it. We understand now what are these forces operating. What do they want? What do they first snatch? They are robbers. That's how the Vedas call it. And they are robbers which rob faith. They rob hope. They rob aspiration. And we don't even regard them as robbery. We think robbing is only money. You may rob these things, but this is the crucial thing. And they come, they are beings, forces which rob us. Similarly, when we hear about the luminous worlds, we are sometimes inspired, enthused by great unknown thoughts, aspirations. Where do they come from? So we see the Book 2 is, and the whole mystery of creation is there. The components of creation, the forces that have gone into it, which continue to operate from behind the scenes, the non-state actors of creation are entirely there. Then we go to Book 3. Book 3 is, of course, mystery of mysteries, the Divine Mother and the Ishvara himself. And what he intends, what is the original blueprint of creation? We all want to know. We all the time keep blaming, why have you made this creation like this? Why are we the way we are? And here Aurobindo discloses the mystery, what is the original blueprint? Now it's important to know. It's important to know that where we have a role to play and what is it that God intends with us and with this earth, if there is an intention at all. So all that is unraveled in book 3. Then Book 4 is the mystery of God's birth in time, the Divine Mother's birth. The Gita speaks of it as a great secret, that the Divine is born in time and he takes up the human burden. This is something which people think it's just a matter of belief. No, it's not a matter of belief. It's a great secret. In fact, the mother goes on to say, if you understand this secret, and this is something the Gita also says, then this awareness is enough to free you. So this is Book 4 is a mystery. Book 5 is, of course, the magical mystery of love. We all understand love and we know how it can change our life. Even its brief passage, a brief breath of love can change our life. Imagine what this force must be on its heights, in its purity, a force that can transform human life. And yet it's the force that most human beings are scared of, because it can topple reason, it can change your world completely. And you know, it's a tremendous power. So Book 5 is the mystery of love. And Book 6 is, of course, the mystery of fate. What weaves the strands of fate? Why things happen the way they happen? Why bad things happen to good people? As we say, always I ask, but are you sure it is bad? Or is it just a limited vision? And equally, I would say, are you sure that the person is good? Because our own idea of good is also very limited. You know, I am very honest. I pay my taxes. I look after my family. And that's it. That's goodness. Hardly, Aurobindo would say that selfishness and meanness are the only sins I find difficult to pardon. And then he says that courage and love are the only virtues. Just imagine. And if you look at it, Sri Aurobindo even says that, but selfishness and meanness are so universal that even they too must be pardoned. They are so universal. Have you ever thought of selfishness as sin? I mean, sin is a way of speaking of it. The whole world is living for oneself and one's family. That's the end of the story. So, selfishness and meanness. So, book 6 is all about fate, the mystery of fate. And then book 7 is still deeper. If you have to master fate, the way is man wants to master fate and he tries to master all the outer ways and means. Like Hiranyakashyap, he even goes right to the creator and says, well, please, I want to master my fate. And the last thing which you can master in fate is death. So he says, you can manage the conditions, but I won't give you the secret of mastering fate. So he tries to manage all the conditions. But eventually, you know, that those conditions don't help. So the way to master fate is through yoga. Yoga, not the way we understand, not standing upside down. Or perhaps in a way, yes, standing upside down, because our vision of the world is topsy-turvy. So we need to, as the mother says, the reversal of consciousness. So 7 is the book of yoga. Yoga is the greatest mystery. Till date, people are trying to understand what is so wonderful about the meaning of these two little letters called yoga. To join, to unite. Unite with what? Unite with whom? That means we are leading a half-life. Adha Adhura Jivan. So half-life will always be a dissatisfied life. So yoga makes us complete. So the whole book 7 is a mystery, all secret. Book 8, death, is of course a mystery. But the original mystery is not death. The original mystery is birth when we look at it from the other point of view. So existence is a mystery. Consciousness is a mystery. Death, of course, is a mystery. So book 9 is what happens after death. So where do we go? Who carries us? Is there some being, some creature, some shadow which comes and takes us? Where does it take us? Are there heavens? Are there hells? And through what stages we pass? So that whole book 9 is again a secret knowledge. And book 9 and then 10, what is the future of death? Has anyone contemplated? Nowadays scientists want to, they are thinking that, well, can death be conquered? So future of death is revealed to us in book 10. And book 11 and 12 are the future of mankind and earth itself, which of course is a secret. So when we look at Savitri, it's the mystery of mysteries, and that's why it's so wonderful. So why one should read, the 100 reasons why one should read. But one is that, especially as youngsters, people want to understand the mystery of creation, and Savitri gives us it. It's like a book which completely reveals everything that we want to know, literally in one book. But then we have the special canto called Secret Knowledge. So if all this is secret knowledge, so what about this canto called a secret knowledge? So now one is that Savitri is all the secrets are revealed there. But there is something which we need to know. You know, often some people say, what are our take-home points? Bullet points. What is it that we need to know? So that secret knowledge which we need to know immediately, that which immediately concerns us. Future of earth and mankind is there. You know, everybody may not understand the mystery of fate, may not want to even know the mystery of fate. Everybody may not undertake yoga. Everybody may not be blessed by the touch of, that love from the heights which leans into the abyss. Everybody may not be ready to or want to understand the secret of God's birth. But what is it that immediately concerns us? So that secret knowledge is there in the canto, secret knowledge. So they are Sri Aurobindo's discoveries. He's sharing with us. So they are the ones which immediately concern us. And therefore, this is a very, very special canto. So we can start. There are several secrets and we can start from the very beginning. And I'm reminded of the very first line which Vivek was mentioning, oh, this line has so many layers. Everything in Savitri is layers beyond layers. On a height he stood that looked to greater heights. So right now we have been told that, you know, this secret knowledge doesn't come just like that. You may analyze with the mind any amount, you won't get it. You have to ascend in consciousness. So what is the height where Ashwapati is standing? He has liberated himself from ignorance. By ignorance is meant that all that veils the truth within us. So what veils the truth? First, the bodily self veils the truth. We think body is me, and the body is such a dense material world, it's like a shield. But today, even as science itself tells, that material world is not just what it seems. There is so much more teeming inside, which we don't understand, really speaking. So there is so much inside this wall of matter. So this veils the truth. So therefore, we really don't know our own self. So you have to be freed from ignorance. It's called ignorance. Then what else is ignorance? Mind is an ignorance. How can mind be ignorance? We are told mind knows. No, mind doesn't know. Mind bases itself on sensory data, which limits the truth. It cuts reality into bits and pieces and gives us in that, and the mind tries to assemble it, but it never recovered the whole. Now, this is a very simple example we can understand. Somebody goes to Pondicherry and comes, and people ask, what is it in Pondicherry? One of the things they ask, kya dekha? So, you know, that question is wrong. What did you see in Pondicherry? Well, I walked into an ashram. It's a building, and there is a nice there is a nice tree standing there, and that's how you go to Pondicherry. And well, there is a dining room where we have food. Is it? Have I told everything? I can make a slideshow presentation on Pondicherry Ashram, okay? I can give a talk on Sri Aurobindo, the mother. Something is missing. See, this is called the total contact, which goes beyond all that the words can speak, all that the senses can perceive, all that the mind can conceive. It goes beyond. You try to describe it, you will end up by saying, you know, समाधि के पास जाके बहुत अच्छा लगता है. There is something special about समाधि. To wonder, what is so special about समाधि? Now you are at loss of words. Any word you say will be limiting it. And I must say, just now I can share this little, I went for a walk with Sergey. I was wondering that, you may have noticed that, you know, I was wanting to come back, that I was thinking, when I take a walk in Pondicherry, it's so sweltering heat, and I'm walking pretty fast enough. So what is the difference? And I was just thinking, what is the difference? So something is there which sort of energizes me, to what extent, which I am not able to get that. So there are things which we cannot. So there, whenever we try to describe anything, we fail miserably. The mind and senses have limitations. So we have to be freed from this ignorance to sense it. Otherwise, we'll go all around the world and we'll come back like the great story of the then president of Singapore, Mr. C.S. Nair. So he was going to meet the mother. He had an appointment, and he's thinking, looking around, what should I tell her? Because he's a president. He's used to telling people, oh, you're good, you're doing a great job. Presidents are, you know, they live in their own little world, which I think is a big world. So he's thinking, what shall I tell the mother? So he says, I'll tell her, great lady, good job. So he looks all around, clean, nice, everything, and she's a lady, great lady. So when he goes to her, he says, he describes his own words. I don't know, all the words escaped. And he just put his head on her lap without knowing that he is... And he says, I don't know where I was transported. There are no words. Actually, speech comes back baffles from there. That's how it is described in the Kena Upanishad. Speech comes back baffled. What is that experience that he had? And he has written, after that he became a devotee in his own right. But what is it that transports you to another realm? So this is, for a moment, there is a swinging off the curtain, and we escape from ignorance, and something touches us. But then we come back into this realm of ignorance, where we think this is real, that is real. And what has Sri Aurobindo got to say about it? He says, the earth's, what now we see is a shadow of what must come. Man is a transitional being. What now we see is a shadow. The real is missing. All that we are seeing, outwardly, what now we see. And sometimes the shadow can be so terrible. Who could have imagined that when the churning of the ocean is taking place and everybody, God has said that Amrit will come out, nectar of immortality, which is bliss, soma. So everybody has gone with that expectation. Supramental world, supramental world. And a lot of things come out and everybody says, see, Amrit, Amrit, Amrit. And suddenly comes Kalkut, the poison, which threatens everyone. And people want to run away. Only few can stay with faith that no, there must be some truth. And then the nectar. So shadow comes. What we are experiencing in life is not yet the real game. Like cricketers, they play at the practice match. And in after the practice match, the real match comes. So right now, this is a practice match. It's preparing us for the real game. What now we see is a shadow of what must come. The earth's uplook to a remote unknown. See, at every level the symbol applies. We look up to the skies. What is there hidden, we don't know from the earth. But it's equally true that from our earthly state, we conjure, we conceive of gods hiding in the blue sky. We conceive of vague things, images. But what is it hidden there? Is a preface only of the epic climb. So we thought that our story of life is complete. People write autobiographies. I don't know what is the meaning of writing an autobiography or biography. That's why when Sri Aurobindo was asked about his biography, what does he say? He says, neither you nor I see that you insist upon writing my biography. Neither you nor anyone can know about my life. It has not been on the surface for men to see. So, all entire life of a human being, and the greatest of great, is still a preface. Just imagine. The whole life is only a preface. So, a preface only of the epic climb of human soul from its flat earthly state to the discovery of a greater self and the far gleam of an eternal light. So, we are right now only gathering, packing the bags. Somebody has told us Himalayas, oh wonderful, we had a slideshow, we read about it and we are packing the bag, but we have not undertaken the journey. It's a preface. Where are you going? We'll go to Himalayas. Oh, it's wonderful. Have you been there? No, I have heard about it. That's how religion operates. Everybody has heard from someone else about what the Himalayas are. But when you go, you realize for all its wonder and delight, it is dangerous and treacherous. And it's beautiful and it's sublime, it's divine. But that discovery is to be made by the individual soul from its flat earthly state. And now, again, three lines of wonder. This world is a beginning and a base. Six pralayas, ice ages. It's only beginning. We thought world has been made and unmade. If you hear some classical musician, first time my experience was that 2 hours he's just doing tune, and you wonder when will the whole thing start. Sometimes you think, is this all? Because it's your first concert you ever attend. I have heard so much about him. What is this he is doing? Suddenly in between the tabla fellow will do tatak, and you're wondering, is this what I've come for? And you feel like going away. And then people tell you, wait. After 2 hours, little picks up. And by the time 6 hours, whole night, you are dancing inside. Jhumna bolte na, that was the state. I remember my AFMC, with friends I went, Ravi Shankar and Allah Rakha. I said, my God, but those 2 hours left a message. This is the message. That right now we have only heard the first strings of the master musician. After all, the divine, what he is going to build, he is only preparing us, like children who play with mechano set. You know, that's not engineering, but that's our, as children we used to play doctor. So you have a stethoscope and you're playing Doctor Doctor. Marriage of Dolls. So it's only a preface. So he says this world is a beginning and a base where life and mind erect their structured dreams. We are allowed to dream. Allowed to dream, and we can dream anything under the sun. Total freedom in that realm. Nobody is going to charge taxes for your dreams. Why are dreams important? It's not whether they are true or not true. Because it rips off this curtain for a moment. The mind tries to see what could be, what might be, what may be. And there are also things known as truth dreams. Sometimes it hits a jackpot. So there are people who have spoken about the coming of Superman, for example. Now this somewhere for a moment you ask them, do you know what Superman is? No, they had their own conception idea, not necessarily the correct idea, but they could dream. There are people who dream about it. So right now we are still dreaming. We have not yet woken up. And we are unable to. So the mind and life build structured dreams. But then what is required? An unborn power must build reality. What a phrase. This phrase has so many layers. What is the unborn power? Mind doesn't have the power to realize what it dreams. Everybody, when they are in the rush of adolescence and dream of a perfect world, adolescent, not the, there is a kind of adolescent you're just running about. But people who have idealism, they are touched by the fire of idealism. A world which is free from suffering, a world, they believe that, you know, their parents will live forever, for example. They believe that love is really wonderful, magic, and they believe it's very good, you know, you build your dreams. So as you grow little elder, unfortunately, there are people who will say, dreams par duniya nahi chalti, you know, the world doesn't run according to your dreams and ideals. This is a harsh reality. No. Shobindo says we are not yet able to experience reality. So what is reality? The real, the truth, we don't know. So what is happening? That truth has to manifest, and all this is an effort for it to manifest. So that truth, which is yet not born upon earth, of course the supermind, but he doesn't use the word. That's one problem by the way of AI searches. If you search supermind, supramental, you will miss this line. Because the word will not catch. Unborn power, that which has not yet come to earth. That's why Shobindo speaks of the new consciousness, the new power. It's new to earth. It's unborn. That's why Agni is described in the Vedas also as a child. Newborn, new birth. So unborn power. What it must build? Reality. Which reality? The one true reality, the truth which is waiting for its hour to build itself. This world is not yet a world of truth. It's a world of truth and falsehood mixed together. And that's why there is the sense of struggle. That's why there is the wrestle. All this is happening, which is true. We can't just justify that all this is because some karma and something. World is perfect. Man is bad. This is a very... then who made man? Human beings can ask, no? That when people say man made the world bad. So man will say, but who made us, sir? We didn't. So that reality is yet to be built. So see, this line is so wonderful. And then he reminds us, a death-bound littleness is not all we are. Immortal, our forgotten vastnesses await discovery in our summit selves. Unmeasured breadths and depths of being are ours. That we are not just this frontal appearance. So the question is proof, evidence. Because he's now talking to us. He's giving us a secret knowledge, and people might as well have said, sounds very good. Is there some evidence, something? Okay, by yoga you can discover it, but we are not yogis. There should be some way. So he reveals very beautifully a few lines below. Deep in us a forgotten kinship points. and a faint voice of ecstasy and prayer calls to those lucent, lost immensities. See, we heard such a beautiful, invocation of Ananta Shaya and Lord Vishnu sleeping over it. Take an opinion poll, ask how many of you have actually seen. See, but something points in us towards that. What is that something? And it rises as a kind of prayer. There is an intuitive sense that God exists. See, that's the beauty. And that's the story of Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad. How much ever science and skepticism and Asuric way, how much ever it may come in the world, and this is simple statistics, it has been there since the cave ages, still man continues to believe in something greater and higher. You may have theories why he believes, theories apart, but the fact is, this faith, intuitive faith in a divine reality, nobody has been able to crush out of existence so far. That's how the life divine starts. It returns after every period of banishment. You see, 50 years back, people would have said, see, science has proved everything. We have a theory of everything. There is no God. We don't need God. There are some superstitious people in India and some mad people in Pondicherry and some ashrams. They talk about God. There is no God. We are the ones. What has happened? God has invaded all those spaces. Did anybody expect when Swami Vivekananda comes in 1893 that the Western world, which knew either religion or science, will wake up to a greater spiritual reality? And today, world over, yoga becomes a household name. God invades you from every side because he exists. How much ever you may stamp him out, he will come, he will show up, because man carries within himself an intuitive sense of God. That's why he refuses to die. How much ever you may say. So, it is there within us. Even when we fail to look into our souls, these are beautiful lines. People often say, okay, but they try to look at life cross-sectionally. Cross-sectionally means these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. So good guys will go to heaven because they believe, and the bad guys are doomed to hell. It doesn't work like that. Longitudinally, one has to look at life. All those who are good guys were once the same, in the same rut. And those who are good now have to become better. It's not the ultimate. And those who are the bad guys today are moving, not discussing our ideas of good and bad, are moving towards something still greater. So why this is so? This is so because this is the original Vedanta, that there is hidden in the heart of earth a divine impulsion. And he speaks of that even when we fail to look into our souls or lie embedded in earthly consciousness, still have we parts that grow towards the light. So when you are in a flight, if you look outside for a moment many times, it looks still. Is it really moving? You have to believe it is moving. It's an act of belief. Your senses will not tell you. Because there are no coordinates after a while. You're just seeing that blue sky. There are no coordinates. You don't experience the motion. Because it's a steady... And you go to sleep. But nevertheless, the flight reaches where it has to reach. Even if it has to come back. It reaches where it has to reach. You were so similarly, even in the densest ignorance, there is an impulsion in things and we are growing. This gives so much hope. We often say, oh, so and so person. And that's what is true spiritual conversion. There is a difference between spiritual conversion and religious conversion. Religious conversion is an external phenomenon. It makes no meaning at all. Spiritual conversion is when suddenly you wake up and say, oh yes, there is something greater, something which is higher. You may take time, that doesn't matter. There are several roads towards that. So this is where that even in ignorance, we are progressing and moving towards that which alone is. So this gives so much hope. And then of course, he says that but a shapeless memory lingers in us still. What is the proof of this shapeless memory? We are bitten by the bug called ideal. How much ever you may say, man still wants a beautiful, perfect world. Otherwise, he should not cry. Because if you say man is an animal, things are the way they are. That's how. Do you expect anything better? Why does something in us wants that things should be better? Always, invariably, because there is in us a shapeless memory of an ideal state we carry within us. And that always seeks. It's like you have wandered away from home and you are seeking your home. Like my first visit to the US, and after 1 week when I was asked, how are you feeling? I said, if you are honest answer, I'm miserable. So most unexpected answer. And unfortunately, the guests thought what they thought, that I'm missing Indian food, took me to an udupi, where all that I could make was, oh, suddenly I realized we make too much noise. Because in a typical restaurant here, you won't find people talking very loud. But in India, we talk very loudly. So, you know, I realized, oh, there is so much of noise. I said, familiar noise, so nice. But that's not what I was missing. I couldn't explain what I was missing. So that's how, because the shapeless memory, I didn't know what I'm missing. Honestly, I didn't know. But I was missing something. I could explain that's like windows closed, all this I have explained later. But something was there which I couldn't, a shapeless memory, which seeks. Now, it's one thing that, okay, we all live where we live and continue. But there is something in us for the beyond, shapeless memory, that we have come from there and that memory is there. And time to time, there is a, as we were talking about, that, and sometimes when our sight is turned within, earth's ignorant veil is lifted from our eyes, there is a short, miraculous escape. People sometimes ask, why go to Pondicherry so far? And you know, you spend so much money. God is everywhere inside. I mean, true. But still go. There was this story of Hasmukh Bhai was sharing with me. He said, he told, rang up Usha Ben and said, I have come just for a day and, you know, I have to go back. I have just about 12 hours at hand. Do you think I should come or I shouldn't come? She said, even if you can come for half an hour, you should come. What happens in that half an hour? There is a short, miraculous escape. Suddenly, Shubhendu would use the word charge yourself. It's very difficult to explain what happens. All your meditations are fine. You meditate and God is within, all that is wonderful. But there is something which happens for a brief moment. And that brief moment is worth all the trouble. People go all the way to Himalayas. Why do they go? You ask them, can you make a house? No. But that momentary, that vision of something which is vast and boundless, they carry with it, with them for a long time, which nourishes our soul. So this is the first secret that he reveals to us. That there is ignorance. This world is only a beginning. There is so much more that is going to happen. Our life is a story. Yet, it is not even the preface has been written, because the real story will begin when we know who I am. Without that, there is no real story. It's a cartoon show going on. So all this is the first great secret. But the hope is that even in ignorance, we are continuing to progress. Why? Because this progress does not really wholly depend on us. There is in the creation a divine impulsion. Whether you like it or not, through all the beautiful events and through all the blows of life, we are being pushed towards a great event. We may sleep, we may not understand, but still we are being carried. So this is the first great secret. This gives so much hope to us. And we can connect with it, because time to time, you know, we experience those hints. Time to time, you know, the intuitive sense of the divine reality is there. But we should not be content with that, because there is so much more. So, what happens then from the life of ignorance? How the transition takes place? Now comes the story of true spiritual conversion. Nobody can push you. Nobody should push anyone. This idea that saparivar, we will go with family to God. No, sir, you are not called. Hold on. Nice little story in Ramayana, you know, that Vir Hanuman. You see these small stories, but they are so deep sometimes. So after Hanuman is seeking, you know, he regards that Ram is my ultimate God, even as a child. And Ram is also a child. Ram doesn't know that, you know, he is a Vishnu avatar, but he doesn't know. So Hanuman is finally, through all the adventures, finally lands up there. And yes, ultimately a moment comes through all the twists and turns of fate when the little Ram says that today I'll have dinner. In my royal dinner, please invite little Hanuman. So Hanuman is so happy beyond measure that, you know, I have been invited by my God. And there is a side leela going on of Vishnu, Shiva. Shiva is Shivan. So Shiva is also there in a human form, you know, trying to figure out things, make it a little easier. So he tells Hanuman, see, I have made your things easy, no? You please take me along also. A little leela. So he says, okay, I'll take you along. He says, but there's a problem. I have not been invited. So he tells Lakshman that. Lakshman says, no, no. Only invitees can come. Nobody else can come. But somehow he makes, you know, the story turns that Shiva also manages to come in. Now what is it? It's like there is a time when it is not that Hanuman reached somehow. There is a point to which you can reach. Beyond it, a hand from above comes and opens the door and takes you in. So when I was had gone to the ashram, people would have you become an ashramite? Have you? I said, see, I'm waiting. The joy of waiting. Let me get. 3 years, 4 years, doesn't matter. A hand will come because I had read this in Essays on the Gita. It'll pull me in. It's fine. So there is this hand which comes. That is being, that's what is meant by many are called, few are chosen. It's not dividing humanity into two types. No. That's one way to look at it. But there is another way to look at it, that many of us are called. And we are waiting. One by one. Come in like Darshan Dekyu. Many are called. But it doesn't mean others are discarded. It means all will be called. Alice in Wonderland, no? All have run the race. All have got prizes. There is no first. So all will be called. Some are let in. Some are getting ready. Some are on the way. Some are perhaps by the way. But you have reached. And so many are called. Few are chosen, and that is the moment which is the moment of spiritual conversion. That is the new birth. And it will come for everyone. So it's not to be pushed that, oh, I believe, so therefore you must believe. Because it's not about belief at all. It's something much more deeper. So here there is the description in the unfolding process of the self. So you see, sometimes Sri Aurobindo's little words, and that's why it's so difficult to understand any of this with dictionary. So when you see in the unfolding process of the self, but we heard self is inactive, passive, witness. How can there be a process of the self? Later he will tell us there is a dynamic self, side of the self. So self is not just something inactive, it is operative also. Like the sun which is above, inactive. But if you ask thus, you know, anybody on earth that, can life exist without the sun? He'll say, no, sir. So sun is both passive as well as active. So here it is in the unfolding process of the self. What happens in that process? Sometimes the inexpressible mystery elects a human vessel of descent. Suddenly it picks up. Okay, now your time has come. And one wakes up, and then there are some beautiful signs with which, you know, he describes, which we can leave aside, how to know that God has touched us. It's not just a belief. It's a lovely set of experiences. A breath comes down from a supernal air. A presence is born. A guiding light awakes. A stillness falls upon the instruments. Fixed sometimes like a marble monument, stone calm, the body is a pedestal supporting a figure of eternal peace. It's not like all the time one is sitting in meditation, but that moment comes when you suddenly fall still. And that's the moment divine has touched you. Then it'll recede, doesn't matter. There's so many experiences of so many people who went to the samadhi and it's okay. And suddenly they put their head and after that they are like gone. So there are moments when the divine touches us. They are moments of stillness. The moments of deep calm. Or a revealing force sweeps blazing in. Out of some vast superior continent, knowledge breaks through trailing its radiant seas and nature trembles with the power, the flame. A greater personality sometimes possesses us, which yet we know is ours. Or we adore the master of our souls. This is a miracle. One of the greatest miracle. People ask, tell us what miracle takes place in Pondicherry. To me, it's a great miracle. Not only Pondicherry, everywhere. You take a thing. Have you seen mother? How many here have really seen mother? Why do we love her? There are a few, I know. But why do we love her? It's a miracle. Or we adore the master of our souls. Who told you that Sri Aurobindo is the master of our souls? Nobody really. But it is truer than truth for oneself. When this understanding awakens, and you can't convince, and you should not convince anyone. But for you it becomes truer than truth. You ask a person who has once turned that way, that don't you sometimes doubt? You'll say, doubt? I can doubt my own existence. But I cannot doubt the truth of Mother and Sri Aurobindo. How does it happen? And this not only all through, you see, with Krishna, with how people suddenly in some way or the other, their life opens to that touch. So it's about that greater personality whom we regard as the master of our souls. And of course, in moments when the inner lamps are lit and the life's cherished guests are left outside, our spirit sits alone and speaks to its gulfs. These are spontaneous meditations. Because otherwise life cherished guests don't leave us. You sit in meditation and see they will say, "We are, I am there, I am there, I am there." But there are moments. That's why he's describing there are moments when he walks in. I often compare it with a typical, not only Indian wedding, I'm sure it's the same. People are waiting for the bridegroom. And they're all, you know, discussing this, that. Suddenly the bridegroom walks in. All dressed. There's a hush. All eyes are turned towards her. So that's it. All the guests are suddenly quiet. What has happened? What? They don't know. Life cherished guests are left outside. People often say, if you meditate, you will find God. When God finds you, you will meditate. You have no choice. The touch brings, you know. So all this he describes. So we'll go to another part. And then he describes many changes which take place. The whole life turns topsy-turvy. I'm not resisting the temptation to go, you know, because everything is so wonderful. But then he describes toward the end of this particular movement, this passage, that there is in us something. Because till now he's only giving us hints. There is something that responds, something opens. What is that something? That he describes is the psychic being. That's what the divine sees. We sometimes look at, you know, there's a very nice, it was given as a message, I think, in April 1950, if I'm not mistaken, 24th April, Darshan message, that the ignorant judge the master by the disciples. The wise judge the disciples by the master. So ignorant people, Ravan, when he sees Nandi, Nandi says, I have come to ask you on behalf of Shiva. He says, who are you? You don't know who I am? He says, you may be. It's my job description. I don't let you in till I ask who you are. He says, nobody has ever asked my identity card. Wherever I go, I can go. I have the only aircraft in the world. I travel in chartered plane. He says, well, all that is fine, but my job description is I got to ask you before I let you in. And Ravan fights with Nandi and he's beaten back. He can't imagine that this bull is throwing me away. He just can't imagine. So you see, that is something within us which is beautifully described, that knows, and it has within it all the different, this is the real script is here. We want to understand, make sense of our lives, find the psychic being. There is no other way. So this psychic being, where the secret story, people want to know about past life, when they talk about past life regression. No, you cannot know. You'll enter into the subliminal. I'm not saying people shouldn't practice it. At least you will have believed that there is a rebirth. So it's fine. But one enters into the subliminal. Many images will come up and it'll help you also. But that's a different subject. But the moment you touch your soul, you will get those glimpses which are like soul memories embedded within. And why that suddenly? Because then you know, oh, that's how it has been. It's my story. This is not first time it is being written. Obviously, all fear of death goes. You know that you have been with the divine and you know the future. He is carrying you through. So there is in us what he describes as a magic key. And if we find that, then we discover our true identity. So Ravan doesn't understand this truth. And so he is thinking that he is so, finally he gets very annoyed. He says, I have to carry Shiva. I am going to take him. I'll lift Mount Kailash. And that's when, you know, Shiva just presses the toe. And Ravan discovers that he is nothing without Shiva. And the famous Shiv Stotra is born from that. So there comes a time when suddenly there is in us something which is what divine responds to. He does not respond to the outer. People often say, oh, somebody living in the ashram, somebody doing sadhana is like this. Never take somebody who is actually into yoga. I'm not talking of living in the ashram, by the way. But somebody who has taken, by default, if the divine has picked him up, he knows best. Why he has picked up, what he has seen, our human eyes cannot see. But he sees this little something. That's why people often ask, the greatest scripture you can imagine, the only bit which is given in the form of a dialogue, which is regarded as the ultimate of, you know, Brahma Vidya. You know, it is given to whom? It is given to Arjun. Where it is given? On a battlefield. Why? What's wrong with Arjun? No, there are better people who are qualified. Vidur is a Mahatma. Yudhishthir is a truthful man. Honest to a default. Forgiving, ever forgiving. Whom it is not given again? It is not given to many of the sages who have been present during that time. It is not given the Bhishma, the mighty. It is not given to Drona, the great guru of... It's not given to any of these people. Even Sahadev, he was a great meditating... He is known to be spiritually the wisest of the Pandavas. But why it is given to Arjun? This question was asked to once Nalnida when he was in his room with a lot of people around, and people were saying that grace picks up based on things external. He says, no, no, grace has its own yardstick, you won't understand. Nalnida was quietly just sitting. So the discussion came that why Arjun was picked up. Arjun had defects in nature. So then the discussion took another dimension, that did he have defects? He said, Nalnida says, yes, used to, you know, he had his own defects, but Arjun is picked up. Now, what is the reason? Sri Krishna tells him. Arjun himself is perplexed. He says, why are you revealing all this to me? Who are you? He says, I have given this yoga to Vivashvan, sun god. He says, sun god? But you are born now. So then he says, you know what, Arjun? You have forgotten. Together we have fought the battle of the ages. You know the story of Charuchandadat. Together we have fought the battle of the ages. You have forgotten, but I remember. So this is where there is something in us which carries that memory. We have forgotten, but the divine knows. And he will find us. Wherever we are, so he will find us. So that he describes, and that is the magic key. Honestly, without finding the psychic being, we are only playing with words, which has its place, of course, in the scheme of things. Everything has its place. The first immediate task of man is to find the soul. And Shubhendu even says that it's the only tragedy to die without finding your soul. And yet men hardly take it as a tragedy, because this is what is there. What is soul? Does it exist? It's a supernumerary. That's how they think. What is the difference that soul makes to your life, once somebody asks this question? So before listing out all the difference that it makes, I said, you know, it makes all the difference. It makes all the difference. So here is that something very beautiful. And it contains the blueprint of the future. And whatever may happen, ultimately this blueprint will unfold itself. It is our glory of the flame of God, our golden fountain of the world's delight, an immortality cowled in the cape of death. We see everywhere death is there, but this is still the immortal one. The shape of our unborn divinity. It carries the blueprint. That's why Mother said it's the psychic being, but of course which will precipitate as the supramental. It carries within itself. Up till now it has brought out the physical, vital and the mental purushas. It will bring out of itself that which is deep, because that's its origin. It guards for us our fate in depths within, where sleeps the eternal seed of transient things. Things will change, lives will come and go. Several times we will walk into the pyre and we'll rise from the pyre and we'll rise from the grave. That's what is meant, by the way, of raising the dead, which we have turned into a kind of religion. This thing. Raising the dead. He raised the dead. We are dead till we are raised into this new life. This is resurrection. A new birth. Where everything. Then we realize, oh my God, I thought I was living. The line in Hindi line. Isko bhi kya jina kehte hain? But when you look back, you think, yeah, that was life. You thought that was life. But was it really living? That's called raising the dead. And so here he says, it guards for us our fate in depths within, where sleeps the eternal seed of transient things. Always we bear in us a magic key. Nobody is an orphan. Nobody is helpless, powerless. It's just that we don't know that there is in us something which is like a magic key. She says, the key has been given to you. You don't use it, you don't open it, you don't acquire it. To Hutas, he says that, you know, what is that book? Hutas Conversations, one of them, not White Roses, but Mother, You Said So. She says that, you know, you have been given the key. You just need to open the door. Once you open, then yes, you have an access. But you don't know where you have kept the key. You don't know how to apply it. You have never opened it. Then during a time of crisis, you suddenly want to open and you are fumbling. You'll end up messing up. You'll probably break the lock and then you have to break the door. But if you have learned to use it rightly, it happened recently. My own house, not me, somebody else. Because my key is with so many people. So somebody tried to open and with the wrong key. So the lock got spoiled. And 2 hours, 3 hours, they couldn't break the lock. What a lock, huh? So they had to break the door. Door means all the latches. So I got a phone from Sushil. Alok bhai, where are you? I said, I'm here. No, don't come for 2 hours. I said, why? He said, no, you are locked out. But so nice of him, ran around, got something. You see, you have the key, but you misapply it. So this is where, but we bear in us a magic key. We must know. Always we bear in us a magic key, concealed in life's hermetic envelope. We don't find it on the surface. A burning witness in this sanctuary regards through time and the blind walls of form. A timeless light is in his hidden eyes. He sees the secret things no words can speak. So it knows everything. That's where the entire, you know, once you discover it, there's a very beautiful line in Chandogya Upanishad. What happens when you discover the soul? It says, Bhidyante hridagranthi chidyante sarva sanshaya. All doubts vanish when the cords of the heartstrings are cut asunder. That's how Shivabindu says in one of his messages, birthday messages to Dr. Satyendra. He says, a veil behind the heart and a lid above the mind conceal us from the divine. Love and devotion rends the veil. In the mind's quietude, the lid is thinned and vanishes. So this is where we need to understand. This is the work to be done. Most important. People say they have no time. Time is running out, if you ask me. There's no time for the most important thing. Everything else is. And you don't need to really take out something special time separately. The entire yoga of the Gita is while we are going through life. So very beautifully he says, regards through time and the blind walls of form. A timeless light is in his hidden eyes. He sees the secret things no words can speak. And knows the goal of the unconscious world and the heart of the mystery of the journeying years. So this is one of the great secrets. And then of course, he says that, well, he understands that all this is screen. We don't, you know. So every time Sri Aurobindo will bring us on the same page. But sir, we don't. He says, yes, I know. You know, you don't see it. It's all screened, subliminal, mystical. All that he says. And then he gives a reality check. He says, you know what? You say that I don't know God exists or not. By the way, do you know if you just look at life in very objectively, very scientifically, are you sure you exist? Atomic constituents. That's what my argument used to be with some of my friends in FMC Medical College. Oh, with all this, you know, this is all bundle of chemicals. I said, you bundle of chemicals and me bundle of chemicals, discussing with each other, these neurons babbling with each other. Is there a sense in all this? Let's forget about it. This discussion has no meaning. And you know what? Your knowledge has no meaning, as is my knowledge has no meaning, because we are nothing but chemicals. What is the validity of chemicals at the end of the day? So, there are ways to look at it. So, anyways. So, he says, yes, I understand. If we look at, there is a way of looking at life from the surface where it looks like a chance, a random accident, this happened, that happened. Very often, see, it is so silly. Ahmedabad plane crash took place. Tragic event. Okay, fine. People jump to conclusion. Why did God do this cruel act? I said, first of all, wait, in your whole life you never congratulated God for all the good things that happened in your life. Huh? God was in the back. You are the one who has done it. You are the one who has achieved. You are the one. You took all the credit. Now suddenly you want God to come in and intervene. That's. Second, are you sure it's necessarily a tragedy? It's tragedy to those who love each other and who are left behind. It's a tragedy. Because that's how we look at life on the surface. But those who have gone beyond, and I pointed toward this poem called The Lost Boat, Sri Aurobindo. They are gone further. This journey is going on towards better fields, brighter fields. That's how. So, yes, if you look at from the narrow perspective, yes. But don't jump to conclusion, God is cruel and he blew up the plane. Don't take away the, you know, if a terrorist doesn't act, you don't blame it on God. Terrorist does it, that's bad enough. Huh? That in the name of God I am doing this. Now, you, when we do it, we are saying the same thing. That this tragedy happened because God is cruel. The difference is terrorist is doing it and blaming it on God. You are not doing it but blaming it on God. That's the only difference. God is so cruel. So this is how we jump to conclusions. So it's all screened, subliminal. Instead we should say, I don't understand your play. I want to understand. My heart is torn with grief. How do I find that peace and give this peace to those who are grieving? Show me the way. Show me. He will show us. But instead we jump to conclusions. So all that he explains to us. And then he says, you know what? What is happening, man? You are giving too much importance to yourself. There is a place where mother says very strangely, you know what? Human beings take themselves too seriously. Read that sentence? Very powerful. I wonder what? So he says, yes, yoga is done by the divine. Yoga is being done upon earth. You are by default, because you are born from earth, at that juncture that now you have to engage in the yoga consciously. Now, people say, what is it news? No, that's exactly what Sri Krishna says. I gave the yoga to Vivaswan. He gave to Manu. Manu gave it to Ikshvaku. If you look at that, what is it? It's not man who does the yoga. Divine does the yoga. And that yoga is being done specifically upon earth. It's the field for the manifestation. Now that gives a sigh of relief. We thought the whole burden is on us. We are going to save the earth. We cannot even save ourselves. I mean, it's okay. Happy sentiment, very nice. But there is a power which is working. Align yourself to that. That's what we can do. And that's given to us. That's our privilege. That's our inborn right. But that's what we have to do. So he says, there's a yoga going on upon earth. And what is the earth seeking? It is aspiring. In us, earth aspires. In us, death also speaks, pulling us back towards inconsciousness. Everybody who believes in pralaya, everybody who believes that no, things will get destroyed. You are actually lending a helping hand to death, the monster. Everybody who cynically declared that no, you know, things are very bad, horrible. You're not realizing that you are lending your voice, your tongue, your speech to the voice of death. And I've seen even people who claim to be on yoga. Everything is bad, horrible, dark. Lending your voice. You should lend it. Look at Sri Aurobindo. In 1916, when this First World War has begun, Sri Aurobindo starts Savitri. When does he put a closing end? When the world has been burnt, singed, really, in the flames of the Second World War. Hell, he gives birth to Savitri. Isn't it sign enough? Imagine Sri Aurobindo saying, you know what, I came, I wanted to do such beautiful things, very sorry. Nobody listens to me. So, in us, death speaks. In us, God speaks. It depends on whom we give our tongue to. So, this earth is seeking through, what is she seeking? Beautiful lines. Just this part we'll read, this yoga of the earth, and then we'll stop. She seeks, this line is so wonderful. Ignorant and wary and invincible. I just love these lines. Even if you are pinned to the ground, don't give up. If you have given up, you are gone. He who loses in his thought has already lost. Even if you were to go away, even through the tragic crash of life. The spirit that has never given up, that has complete faith, will rise again. The spirit rises mightier with each defeat. Its godlike wings grow wide with every fall. So here is reminding, what is this the earth need? This is what should be our gift to Mother Earth. Bhurin. So Bhurin kaise ada karenge? What is she seeking? She seeks through the soul's war and quivering pain the pure perfection her marred nature needs, a breath of Godhead on her stone and mire. I had been to Ramlala temple recently. I mean, been means I was carried along. So I said, okay, now this is done. Let's at least build Rama temple here. This mud and here let's build. It's not an, this, okay, this is a beautiful symbol and nice to connect, but let us build that temple. If faith she craves that can survive defeat. The sureness of a love that knows not death. The radiance of a truth forever sure. Here, this supramental. Again, Google search will not give you. There is no shortcut to reading the books in original and contemplating upon that. The sureness of a truth forever, the radiance of a truth forever sure is supramental. Is this how you, he says, perfect perfection. What most she needs, what most exceeds her scope, a mind unvisited by illusions gleams. And these illusions prepare us for that ultimate radiance that Mother describes. Illusions gleams are, oh, so lovely, then it vanishes. A will expressive of soul's deity. Our will does not express the divine will. We want the divine to follow our will. He should be our slave. I want this, you do it. You better do it. If you don't do it, you are not God. So we want to go to places where mannat wala God, na? God who fulfills your wishes. That is Kamadhenu and Nandini. That's not divine. Wish-fulfilling God who will fulfill our wishes. But man's real purpose is to fulfill God's will in us. That is man's manhood. A strength, not forced to stumble by its speed. So here is the hint of the vital. Vital wants to do too many things too fast. And it stumbles. It wants to, you know, change the whole world within 5 years. God has taken... how many? 6 creations. Just for it to reach where it is, you know, a breakthrough into the supramental. A joy that drags not sorrow as its shade. For these she yearns and feels them destined hers. Heaven's privilege she claims as her own right. Just is her claim, the all-witnessing gods approve. Clear in a greater light than reason owns, our intuitions are its title deeds. Man does not give up this quest for perfection. How much ever you may tell him, ultimate truth is mukti. This world is ye sansar, kaante ki baadi, ulaj ulaj mar jana hai. This world is pain and suffering. People will go, you know, to listen to that song. Very nice they will feel. Then Swamiji will come and say, you know, this world is moha, maya. Then Swamiji will put a hundi. So you tell him, sir, this is maya. He says, yes, I am getting you rid of the maya. So you put some in the hundi. Then you come back. When you come out, what happens? You pick up your mobile and see for the missed calls. This is what has happened in religion. Sri Aurobindo does not want that. He says this is the error. We color our life, but we change nothing inside. He doesn't want this coloring, painting. Nor is earth satisfied with this kind of a thing. So, but the intuition in us never gives up. So this is the title deed. Earth's winged chimeras are truth's steeds in heaven. The impossible God's sign of things to be. If something has come within the realm of imagination, then only you will say it is possible or impossible. So you say it is impossible, but it has come within already within the realm of imagination. It has declared itself. So it's bound to be whatever be the time taken. So this is how he describes the whole yoga of the earth. And a last beautiful passage. So people may ask, okay, but how will it happen? When will it happen? When will we know that today the supramental world is, you know, come? We are waiting to announce to the whole world. And what did the mother say? They had on 56, her New Year message. She obviously knew that, you know, supermind is going to come. She said that she knew 55 New Year message. And she says the next 14 months are going to be very difficult. So 56 New Year messages, the greatest victories are the least noisy. The advent of a new world is not announced by the beating of drums. So how will it happen? Thus will the masked transcendent mount his throne. Masked transcendence is the divine, mask is the human. So outside the mask, ego is sitting as I is the king. Wait. When he steps out, that is the Krishna and Kansa story. Entire story is about that. When darkness deepens, strangling the earth's breast, and man's corporeal mind is the only lamp, as a thief's in the night shall be the covert tread. Most unexpected moments. That's why Shubhendu said, it's the hour of God. The hour of the unexpected. He loves. He's a trickster. When you least expect, when you're expecting, oh, I'm sitting in meditation, something will happen. After half an hour, say one, another half an hour, I was only thinking of things. And suddenly, most unexpectedly, he walks inside. And you are filled with a sense of the presence. It can be most unexpected. Places, situations which are, you, I mean, all of us have experienced, I myself, most unexpected. You look outside a flight and you see the blue sky and then you are transported in a flight. Kaisa raha yatra bhi, what to say? Kaisa raha yatra? And then you are transported. You look at a pebble and suddenly, you know, your eyes are lit up with something else. So unexpected. So, he comes like a thief, huh? Of one who steps unseen into his house. We had closed, because why he has to come like a thief? Because we have closed all the doors. That's what Kansa did. That's what Hiranyakashipu did. We won't allow God to come in, don't worry. He has all the tricks, all the secret passages. A voice ill heard shall speak, the soul obey. A power into minds in a chamber steel, a charm and sweetness open life's closed doors, and beauty conquer the resistant world. Divine will from inside open the doors. And look at these lines, beauty conquer the resisting world. The divine beauty which brings harmony, delight. Why is using the word beauty? Ultimate goal of creation is delight, harmony. Mother says truth is one with supreme delight. And delight has these two aspects. Beauty and harmony. They go together. The truth light capture nature by surprise. A stealth of God compel the heart to bliss. And earth grow unexpectedly divine. No newspaper. Today they will say hopeless condition. Third world war. They will, given to man, sixth world war would be. You know? third world war is going to happen. What is going to happen? What is going to happen? And they will have theories, oil, this, that, everything is going on. This is going to happen. So, all the analysts have said, they have slept off night. God said, okay, I have a chance. And earth grow unexpectedly divine. Last few lines. It describes what will happen, what is meant by growing divine. But the last four lines. If you shall see what none yet understands. It's easy to speak, difficult to understand. By speaking, I mean you can read all the words and rattle out. Somebody once, is this diagram true? Showed me that, there used to be a diagram which used to go around. Puranishi's diagram, but it had a basic flaw in it. So someone showed me, is this diagram true? I said, what do you mean? Supermind, overmind. I said, yes, supermind is there. But supermind is also in the heart of this fellow. supermind is here also. In a way, supermind is everywhere. He said, no, this is too confusing. I said, but this is truth. So speaking is all this, describing one layer after another. This is too clear to be true. Mother says at one place. Mind's clarity is like that. People make a diagram. Beyond mind, higher mind. Then they make divine so far. That's why people run away, You tell them supermind. Where is supermind? Beyond the overmind. Where is overmind? Intuitive mind. Oh my God. All that we have to travel. Then you tell them, no. Sri Aurobindo has also said it's also in the heart. Wherever the divine is, supermind is there. Be rest assured. Supermind is his operating system in creation. Oh, is it so? Yes, yes. And wherever there is supermind, mind, life, body, everything is there. It is the Lord, Ishwar, ultimate. Oh, that's it. So how do we find him? Very simple. He is the Lord. Now, if you think you are the Lord, then two Lords cannot stay. Lion pride. So one has to subordinate. He won't subordinate. He cannot by default. So what you have to do? Become subordinate your ego. Simply say, ma, ma, ma. Surrender yourself. Give yourself. Become his slave, his servant. Whatever way. Two lords cannot stay on one throne. If the ego is lord, then he is on the back seat. So supermind is not so complicated after all. It's very simple. It's complicated to the ego that wants to climb by its own effort. I'll climb. But it's very simple to the psychic being within us. It says, yes, I know. What is required? It tells nature, surrender. What do we do? All that you are doing to the ego, no. You do there. That's all you have to do. People say, what is surrender? We all know surrender. Because we surrender to parents, we surrender to wife, we surrender to husband. Sorry, huh? Okay. Now things have changed, okay. We surrender to husband, we surrender to wife. The husband was old package. We surrender to the child. We surrender to all the news channels. We surrender to everybody. Then we ask, what is surrender? It is same process. Just turn it, deflect it. The great saint Bhule Shah, he goes to a master, he says, I want to learn spirituality. And that person is a farmer, he is constant. He says, he ignores him. He says, no, teach me. There must be some meditation technique. You have to sign in with some $500 special retreat and they'll teach you some special meditation. He's not doing any of these things. So Bhule Shah is wondering, what is he doing? So after some time, he says, are you a fool? To Bhule Shah. He says, what? He says, you don't understand. I'm trying to tell you precisely. He says, what are you trying to tell? So he says first in Punjabi. Athe chug otherak. He says, I'm plucking from one place, putting elsewhere. Pluck your attention and concentration from elsewhere and put it on the divine. That's all you got to do. You want to pay money? Learn a course? Do it. Become a fool. Certified. diploma in this course of finding God. So simple. Instead of surrendering to all the falsehoods and ego of the world, surrender to the divine. So therefore he says, God shall grow up while the wise men talk and sleep and conduct courses in spirituality. Special summer retreats with how many dollars, I don't know. So many retreats nowadays go around, you know, special courses. Wherever you have to pay money to find God, just close your eyes. You may do out of your own joy. That's called Dakshina, Guru Dakshina. You never charge money. For what? It's not yours. It's the divine's. Yoga is not given by you. The first step is wrong. Yoga is given by the divine. Who are you? You, maybe he may pick you up as one of those postmans. Don't play the one who has written the letter. Nalida used to carry Sri Aurobindo's letters to different places, divine postman, and one of them was Amal Kiran, when he would close lines of Savitri, because Amal Kiran has asked and Sri Aurobindo is sending and the envelope is closed, and Nalida is feeling a great temptation. Intuitively he senses these are some very special lines, and Amal Kiran writes that when he would hand me, he would wait for a while looking at me, that maybe I'll open and read out, but I'll quietly smile and go inside. So you see, divine postman, that's how he earned the name. So postman is postman, he's not the author of the script of life. So he says, God shall grow up while the wise men talk and sleep, for man shall not know the coming till its hour. That hour could be now. That's how one should live. That's what is called as aspiration should be such. But without impatience, that hour could be now. For man shall not know the coming till its hour. And belief shall be not till the work is done. So, Jema, to rush through it, because it's so beautiful a canto, but we'll continue, sure. I think, tomorrow. Yeah.
Anybody wants to ask any question? You can
please. Better ask questions, otherwise I'll start reading something else. Yes.
The action of intention. How does one achieve patience if the results are not something you can readily see?
Yes, so that's the great fallacy. First of all, we need to understand that whatever effort we may do, this reality, real speaking, in any aspect of life, not only spiritual life, any aspect of life, results are never, were never in the hands of the person doing the effort. This is a fallacy. Because creation doesn't operate like an ATM machine. See, that I have put in so much effort, therefore it should come. Sri Aurobindo says something very interesting. Why it is so, he says that God does not, God gives you the result in the measure of the sincerity of the sadhana. Now this sincerity is a very big word. He knows the inner intent. He knows why we are doing what we are doing. Even we may not know. For instance, he may see that, oh, he is trying to maybe be a yogi. He says, okay, sit, wait. But for another person, he may see he just not wanting to be anything. He just wants me. Why? Because he loves me. This is that starting point of yoga. The mother says, why do you want the divine? This is the question you need to ask yourself. And he says, you want to be a yogi, a superman. You want to do help humanity. You want to, you know, several things, have power. None of this indicate that one is ready for the path. So the first thing is this idea, We have to dismantle a lot of structures within. That's why in yoga, there used to be a lot of preparation. One of the stories with regard to patience, how patience is cultivated. Ultimately, if the soul has caught it, it will continue to strive, regardless of the outer mind's impatience. So there are stories of a man who went to learn fencing. Heard that story. And the master says, okay, come in. He's very happy. He says, ah, from tomorrow, master will give me the sword and I'll be a big... And he's imagining he is a big, you know, sword fighter. And next day, the assignment comes. 3 days, there is nothing. Then the assignment comes, you cook, you prepare chapatis for people, bread for, you know, those who are there. So he says, why? He says, maybe the dress takes time to make and the sword takes time. So he starts making the bread. Then 1 week, 1 month, 3 months, he says, what has happened? When will my sword come? As soon as he is wanting to ask the master, master just walks away. Then after some time, he says, maybe, you know, master has let me in, but he has realized that I am not, it's okay, I am enjoying making bread. At least I can see the people who are doing fencing. At least I can tell them, you know, I am also part of that place. So he starts thinking like that, and 3 years pass. And he becomes an expert at the art of making bread instead of fencing. One day while he's making bread, he gets a big blow. He suddenly gets angry. Who has done this? And he sees it's the master with a wooden sword. He says, oh, I'm sorry. Because he got angry, then he realized after all, master. So then again after a few days, then the blows keep coming unexpectedly. And he says, like, you know, what's this happening? And then one day he has become such an expert that at night in sleep he will get that master is coming and he knows blow is going to come, so he'll get up and he'll already do pranam, master please don't give me that blow. So one day when at night he gets up like this, the master says, I've got this sword ready, tomorrow morning you come and learn fencing. So what is the story? Story is that, you know, when we talk about action and consequence or result after a method, I'm talking of methods of practice, well, God is infinite. He can't bind him to a method. He may sometimes, but that's not because of the method, that is regardless of the method. The intensity has to grow to a point where it becomes our life. That's how Sri Ramakrishna said. When somebody asked, when will I find God? You know, that result in another sense. He didn't say anything. He took the person, come, I'm going for a bath in the Ganges, come along. So he also went. As the person took a dip, he said, take a holy dip. He took a dip and then Sri Ramakrishna held his head by his hand. Now he got terrible, you know, because he's breathless. After some time he comes out and says, oh, what did you do? What did you want? He says, I just wanted breath. He says, when you want the divine with this intensity, he'll reveal. And mother describes it like the chick inside the egg. So there are a lot of methods, processes, practices, reading, frustrations, failures, successes, some experience here and there. All this is feeding the chick inside. It's growing. But still, the definitive thing eludes. But a time comes as a result of all of this that she says, the mother hen has to just put a little and it'll come. So don't give up whatever effort one is doing, regardless of the results. So first lesson is this. And if you keep steadfast, now where does this patience come from? Because something is so important. So that's what again it means. That what is it for which I'll continue to strive regardless of anything? Which I think is really, really, really the most important thing in my life. So one of the things she explains that, you know, what you should ask is the divine the most important thing in your life? She's asked that how to discover the divine presence. He says, don't ask this question. Ask this question. Is the divine the most important in your life? This is a question we have to answer. Now, if that is so, you know, a thirsty man, even if he's dying in Sahara, you ask him, what do you want? I want water. There is no water anywhere. He says, yes, but I want water. If you are asking me, what do I want? I want water. That should be the state of a seeker. And all these practices which start, everybody starts like that, reach a grand culmination when whatever is the condition, you want that. And then one day the door opens and you are bathed in that. So this is how it happens. So results may come, may not come. Very often, not coming is more helpful. Because I sit for meditation in a technique and then I get a result. I feel very calm and peace. Now what happens? I get hooked to that method. And divine is beyond systems and methods. So what happens? I get every time I connect practice, I get, people use the word my practice. They say I do this practice, this my practice, and I feel peaceful. But do you know that you have got stuck with that little bandwidth of peace? So this kind of a thing has its big disadvantages, and there are so many stories like that. So while I'm not saying method for each one, there are different methods, and that's how sometimes religion comes. So how religions are formed, somebody did something and discovered. And like Buddha, how they turned him into a religion, whereas Buddha is beyond all systems, all philosophies. And he's turned, and mother says it's a pity that even in his lifetime they had turned him into Hinayana, Mahayana, Theravada, all kinds of things. Why? Because man wants to hold on to something. One of them is results. But did he say that? No. So the moment you let go of even that idea, but keep the flame, then the result will come. So that's how result means, then it doesn't matter. And you are flooded. What do you call it? You can't even call it result, because you know it's he who has chosen to flood you and not you by some effort that you have found something. Cannot. He's infinite. Just imagine. We are so finite. That invasion we cannot bear. So why he waits? Why he gives time? Because we are not ready. We'll be drowned. We'll be carried. We'll lose our head. And surely the divine does not want that in trying to get supramental we become infradental or inframental. So he says, wait, I know your aspiration is fine. But you are not ready. Sometimes a whole lifetime is preparation. Shubhendu's letter is there. So we have to continue. That's the only thing. And we have to continue because there's a poem of Shubhendu, I have a thirst, meditations of Mandavya, where one of the poems he says, I have a thirst and the thirst presupposes water somewhere. But in my life I may never find. Old nature sits a phantom on the way. Old wants persist and resist. Yet I shall not faint. There is a thirst and the thirst presupposes water somewhere. I shall not faint. So that should be the spirit. I shall not faint, O God. Continue, and who knows, it may be just round the corner. Okay. So we meet tomorrow.
We'll meet tomorrow.